Today, This American Dice presents Dungeon World, After the Last Battle. The Great War has ended. The terror and torment that touched the lives of nearly everyone in the land have ceased. The enemy vanquished, peace shall reign as it had for centuries prior. Amid the parades and victorious soldiers returning home after the long conflict, the lord of the last major city at the edge of the land has summoned four brave adventurers for a meeting. As the confetti and streamers are scattered, and the celebratory wine flows, the Iron Duke has a mission for them. But will it prove more than they can handle? Find out today on This American Dice.
What if I played Dungeons and Dragons, but with a different kind of set of rules? What if I played Dungeons and Dragons with a couple of fucking tools?
Oh,
what if I learned friendship is forever, yeah?
Dungeon World, After the Last Battle, is filmed in front of a live studio audience.
Episode 1, The Flatiron Duke, or As the World Doesn't Turn.
Here is the deal. You guys find yourselves in the Forbidden Forest. All right. I know, you're not supposed to be there. So, do you like the name Dark Forest or Forbidden Forest more?
I'm partial to Forbidden Forest.
Anybody else?
How about Secret Forest?
How about Forest Whitaker?
Shadow Forest.
All right. So, this... and David, any thoughts?
I don't like any of them. Can you give us some more options?
How about the brutal Bosky. No? All right, I'm going to go with I have dark forest written on this paper, so I'm going to go with that. Okay.
Cool.
So we see kind of shots of you guys strolling through this forest. I'm going to actually throw something crazy at you guys. There is a move in Dungeon World called Undertake a Perilous Journey. All right. So what we're going to have to do is pick some roles, and somebody has got to be the trailblazer.
I'll be the trailblazer.
All right. So Dirk is going to be the trailblazer. Someone's going to have to scout ahead.
Can I also do that?
Everybody has to take a different role.
This is a one-man journey.
Okay, so let me tell you what these guys do. The Trailblazer basically figures out where we got to go to help us get there faster.
Oh, that's a terrible thing for me to do.
The Scout works on spotting trouble before it becomes a problem.
Yeah,
and the Quartermaster makes sure that we don't run out of supplies.
I'll be the Quartermaster.
All right, and what's your character's name again?
Roscoe Tinklechimes.
Roscoe Tinklechimes. All right, Roscoe will be the Quartermaster. Dirk is going to be the Scout. Or no?
What's the other option?
The Trailblazer. Trailblazer helps us get there faster.
I'll be the Trailblazer.
All right. Dirk is going to be the Trailblazer.
And the only one left is the Scout?
Yes. Which either you or Alex could do. Either Gritta or Alex.
Jeff.
What's your character? Or Jeff.
Sure, I'll do it, I guess.
All right. Gritta's going to knock that one out. All right. So... Very good. I'm very excited. Okay. So.
Okay. I've also been talking for a while. I just realized I was muted.
So. Okay.
Could each
of you who are doing this, could Jeff, Roscoe, and Gritta all roll their Undertake a Perilous Journey, which is a wisdom roll?
Wisdom roll. Okay.
So just 1d6?
No, it's 2d6. But you can also, I think, just click like to roll wisdom.
Yeah, those are
triple. Yes, all right. Oh, cool.
How do I do that?
You guys are all doing so well.
So if you filled out your character sheet.
Yeah.
You filled out your character sheet?
Yeah.
Just click on the wisdom circle once.
All right.
Oh, there it is. All right, cool. Where does it pop up, though? How can I see what I rolled?
In the chat.
It pops up in the chat part, but Alex, you didn't need to roll. You weren't doing a thing, I don't think.
Oh.
Okay.
Oh, nice. I got a 3. I'm the trailblazer.
All right.
Your real short trail.
Okay. Okay.
Here we go.
So
when you get some experience, though.
Whoa. Yeah. So when we see you guys, one thing is, you guys aren't hungry, but you have been on an incredibly long journey. So I think when we see you, you guys look like really, really haggard. Okay. Yeah. And so this journey that I think should have taken you guys maybe like weeks, maybe took you like several months in this process. So the camera kind of goes one by one to each of you, and we get just a physical description of each of you guys. Ah, crap.
So Dirk's probably at the front, blazing the trail. Damon Proudly with his shredded body, sly eyes, long dark hair, and dark disheveled clothes, which were once fancy.
All right. Okay. And Dirk's our thief, right?
Well, I mean, don't just call him a thief, but yeah, that's the role that he'll play in this party.
Okay, right. All right.
Okay, so probably taking up the rear, maybe moving a little slower than the rest of the party, is Roscoe Tinklechimes, the wizard. He looks a lot like Schmendrick the Magician, if you're familiar with him from The Last Unicorn. He's got like a blue pointed hat. He's got like a big nose. He's sort of thin, kind of unassuming looking. He has stylish robes that, like Dirk's, are also quite worn at this point. What else? Thin body, haunted eyes. And yeah, he's just sort of tiredly trudging along.
All right. Who do we see next?
You got Greta Grimhammer. She is a war priestess who's just stomping along behind them. Probably like, this should have taken... What's taking so long? I hate this place.
All right. And the last person we encounter.
Jeff.
Is Jeff. What do we see when we take our first look at Jeff?
Jeff has a battered helm draped over his eyes, just covered, you know, look pretty low, and he's got hard eyes, a live body, tan skin of a working man who's been out in the sun too many days, and he's chewing on a straw of wheat.
Okay. And is he carrying anything that we see that seems pretty, like, perhaps signature towards Jeff's look?
His daughter is always with him. And his daughter is his reason for fighting. It's the reason why he fights. And he lifts his daughter from his side. His the loud metal clanks against his chainmail as a flail drops from his hand with spikes on it, and big and messy.
Okay,
that's his daughter. That's his daughter.
Oh, his daughter! His daughter is the flail. Okay. His flail is his daughter. Okay, of course. Every warrior's flail is their daughter. Okay, cool.
He just named daughter. It's his flail, but he names his daughter.
Nice. Okay, so I've got some question for you guys. So, Jeff, my question is, the dark forest, why are most common folk terrified of this forest?
It's called the dark forest, not just because... you know, the shadows from the trees, and doesn't even let the moonlight touch the ground late at night, so it's pitch black. But even during the day, an eerie fog can creep out from the forest, shrouding the fields and such that surround it. And when the fog goes away, there's like skeletons and stuff.
Okay, so is it rumored that there are, like, living skeletons or, like, skeletons walking about in this forest?
Nobody knows. That's a very good theory, though. Some wonder if the skeletons were just, you know, always there, but they, you know, they didn't see them until the forest fog creeped out. But maybe the skeletons can only move about in total darkness. You know, I think that's the best theory.
All right.
But townspeople know that people who venture too far into the dark forest can sometimes not come home.
So, all right. So that's why most common folk are terrified of the forest. It's super, super dark. There's all this fog. People have said like, oh, I saw skeletons in the fog. I swear I don't want to go anywhere near that place, and have been real spooked of the dark forest.
But the skeletons, if they go too far outside the dark forest and there's sunlight, they just fall on the ground. They're, you know, that's why when the fog recedes, there's inert skeletons.
Okay. But
they have blue eyes.
That gets us to our next thing, which is a question for Roscoe as our wizard. The dark forest, which we know is very dark and it's full of fog, and people have perhaps seen skeletons in the fog. And it assumes that it's the common people are scared of it. But what do those common folk know? What terrors there exist that the layman can't conceive of? although I wrote possibly skeletons.
Yeah, I just picture the journal says skeletons with a big question mark.
Yeah, that's the name of this episode.
Episode 1, The Flatiron Duke, or As the World Doesn't Turn, or Skeletons?
All right, how about I have learned that there is actually something that people should at least be wary of in the forest, and that is that there's a powerful witch who was banished a long time ago, and I'm fairly certain that she's still alive. The people in the wizarding community like have good reason to believe she's still there, and that maybe some of this fog is sort of, if not made by her, then at least used by her to hide that she's still around and doing whatever potentially nefarious things witches do.
Nice. Okay, so we got a witch up in the mix.
Oh, shit.
Okay, and now I'm going to go out on a limb, and for if anyone else, just to make sure you guys know, witch is W-I-T-C-H?
It is.
All right. Okay, good. I'm glad we're all on the same page. All right, so my next question is that... Oh, I've got some other questions about a place on the other side of the forest, but I'm going to save those for you. So, when we bring up what's on the other side of this forest, I've got a question for Gritta and for Dirk. All right. So, we kind of see you guys all looking around, and we got there without wasting a lot of our rations. So you guys still have like fairly. Like full packs of food. Even though it was months long, you were able to kind of scavenge up some stuff, forage some things.
A harsh but fair quartermaster.
I know. Yeah. Luckily, there were all these skeleton bones that you were able to make broth of. and who was our scout? Our scout was Gritta, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Gritta, at some point, you're kind of scouting ahead. And you guys are moving in some ways. It works to your benefit that you've moved so slowly. It allows you to kind of scout more thoroughly. And after you've kind of gotten lost through some of these areas before, you kind of almost feel like I know some of this stuff a little bit better than if maybe we hadn't been lost and wandered through these areas so many times in circles, to the point where you realize that there is a trap awaiting you. A trap of two huge, hideous ogres. They're hoping to spring this trap on some unsuspecting travelers coming through here that they'd possibly seen wander about through this, but you spot them first. And we see that they're huge. They're maybe 12 feet tall. One of them is standing like behind a big tree, but looking the wrong way. And next to this ogre is like a massive club, like telephone pole size almost. And there's another ogre kind of standing nearby with a similarly huge club. And their arms are tremendously long. Like each arm is at least the length of a full grown man. and we see them, and we see that you've spotted them first and can kind of signal to your teammates, to the rest of the party. But that's when we hop away to a party. Woo! All right. So the Great War has ended. The terror and torment that touched the lives of nearly everyone in the land have ceased. The enemy vanquished, peace shall reign as it had for centuries prior. Amid the parades of victorious soldiers returning home after the long conflict, the Lord of the Last Major City, at the edge of the land, has summoned you for a meeting. And I think we see a quick shot of like this big kind of after the Great War parade and party. And everybody just give me one detail that we see real quick.
Streamers.
We see streamers going everywhere. My God. Streamers like this. People have been saving them, hoarding them for in case the war ever ended.
All the dyes that are too expensive to use.
They're like, oh.
Blue streamers.
Yeah.
There's a few effigies just burning of the enemies.
All right. Yeah. 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 What else?
Beads. People are just throwing beads, going crazy for beads. They're beads and not streamers. Worth anything. Yeah.
Yeah, so there's beads and there's streamers everywhere.
There's a dragon.
Dragon.
Oh, maybe like a great dragon carcass or like bones. Yeah, like claimed as one of the big victories at the end of the war or something.
Oh yeah, maybe somebody has here's a dragon like fangs or dragon claws are being like brought back into the town of like, look at this, the great victory. Here's a piece of it. Proof that the war is over, someone yells. Mm-hmm. Okay. Cool. So our party is assembling. Likely not for the first time have these characters met, but this is the first time in our story that they're coming together. And they're coming to meet the lord of this city. And again, this is like the last major city at the edge of the land. And you're kind of in the lord's chambers where they would meet with you. And I've got a few questions for you guys about the war.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, okay. I'm going to start with, we didn't get answers from Lee or David for the other question, so we'll go to them first, actually. So either one of you guys, could both of you guys just roll 1d6 for me, and whoever gets the high one will answer it first.
I got a 6.
Oops. Yeah. Like it.
Okay. All right. So, all right, Lee, this war raged on for years and years and years. I imagine possibly decades, but now it's over. It was a war fought throughout the land against rebels. Who were these rebels?
Oh, I got it. The rebels all held to a foul and noxious religious belief that the world was in fact round.
Okay. So religious rebels with crazy ideas.
Round earthers, we call them.
Okay. Round earthers. All right. The roundies. Is that what they were called often?
Yeah.
Okay. Globalists. Bunch of globalists. Okay. The rounders or the globalists or the roundies. Orb boys. All right. So then, David.
Mm-hmm.
The rebels, the globalists, the roundies, these crazy religious rebels with their wild ideas, fought alongside or even led by some kind of great creature. So I have examples include a dragon, a giant, a demon. Something like that. What was this great creature that either was their leader or they fought alongside as like part of their great rebellion?
Just a dragon, and that's easy.
What?
You wrote a giant part.
And a giant dragon, and we don't even get, you know, one dragon. I thought that's what's going on.
All right. So we got 4 dragons, 2 giants. It's a storm of dragons.
Yeah, is this a math riddle?
Yeah, exactly. Get ready. Okay. All right. So then could Roscoe and Jeff, could you each... Well, Roscoe, could you roll a die? Just a D6. Because Jeff got a 2. All right. So, Roscoe, how was the great dragon defeated? And, just as importantly, what had to be sacrificed to defeat it?
The way they were able to defeat the dragon was through vile trickery. So, like, the flat earthers, or, you know, the sane people of this world.
The sanatologists.
Yeah, the sanatologists. Like, figured out where, like, a lot of their non-combatants of the globalists were sort of hiding, like, in, like, maybe, like, in caves behind the city, like far away from, like the city that was being sieged. And so they, like, made a trap there, and they started, like, attacking all these civilians. And the dragon, seeing this happening, is like, well, I can't let that happen. That's terrible. So it goes back to save, like, all these, like, defenseless citizens, and when it gets there... We spring this trap, like maybe they could stage like a cave in and like crush it.
Okay.
And so what do they lose would be would it count if I said that they lost the respect of the people on their side? Like they're like, oh, our army's like a bunch of monsters.
That works. Yeah. So they in order to do it, they had to do something like really horrendous.
Really morally reprehensible.
Well, yeah, they lost the cave city's vote. Well, we're losing the cave people's vote. Yeah. Sir, we're polling very badly with the troglodytes. Okay.
So, like, maybe even, like, people are concerned that maybe there'd be, like, another rebellion at some point. Where people are like, oh, we won, but we, our leaders are, like, really awful.
Okay. Cool. All right. So, but that wasn't... the last great battle. That was the destruction of the dragon. Jeff, as the fighter, it's only appropriate that you tell us how the final battle was won.
It was at a great cost. And this is the battle between this village and this dragon?
No, so this is like the battle of like the kingdom or the land.
Oh, okay.
Which I just keep calling it because maybe it's not a king. Maybe it's not a kingdom.
Well, there's two stories about that battle. There's a story that everybody knows. Then there's the story of those who were there. That battle was only won after King. No,
that's fine.
Yeah, the Duke led all of his political rivals into the field of battle and lured them into an ambush and didn't support them. And a lot of good men died that day, a lot of good men. And only then, after the enemy forces were weakened, after fighting against some of the bravest men this kingdom has had, did the Duke come in with the cavalry, just trampling down friend and foe alike.
Okay, so... one of like the great dukes of the land.
He's now a war hero. He's now celebrated as a war hero.
Nice. So, so now the one of the great dukes of the land, now celebrated as a war hero, led some of like the many nobles and who are possibly like political rivals of his towards the great enemy army, and only after they'd been kind of like smashed, he waited till all of his rivals were defeated before he came in with cavalry to stop them. So I think that actually works out well where, throughout we see like shots of this city, and people are kind of celebrating. They're excited that the war is over and that there's finally peace. There's all these soldiers who are kind of like coming home, or at least even if this isn't their home, then at least they're just excited to be someplace that they can call home momentarily away from the battle. But all of the kind of townspeople are a little bit hesitant because of all of these terrible things that they've heard the soldiers do. And all of the soldiers themselves are a little bit hesitant because there's been like a great lack of trust and a great uneasiness building within them. And there's even maybe some somber moments until somebody like brings forward that like dragon claw. And then there's a great kind of cheer as people get excited again. Cool. You guys should all kind of like give your general elevator pitch of your character, like couple word character concept. Sorry, of like your couple word character concept.
My character is based off Matt Mardigan in the movie Willow.
Thanks.
So he's
muted.
Yeah.
Okay, that was Val Kilmer's character.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I'll keep what I sent in the email. Basically, my character was sort of a lowly apprentice. He accidentally discovered a very powerful weapon, and it was used at some point against the globalists. And the military sort of made him like a propaganda figure and like sort of pushed him into the limelight. He was not sure how to talk about that.
I've got, what's her name? Greta Grimhammer, who's a dwarven battle priest of Ragnar Bloodbeard. God of war and anger.
Ragnar Bloodbeard. And finally, what's the elevator pitch, couple word pitch for who Jeff is, Alex?
Jeff is a human fighter, and he is from this kingdom where we are currently located, and he knew a lot of good men who died that day.
Okay. Cool. All right. So
he doesn't put up with shit.
He doesn't put up with shit.
Yeah, he's usually scowling.
Okay, scowler. Jeff, mm-hmm. The scowler.
Yeah, add that.
Okay, well, let's go through bonds. How do you guys know one another? So, like, you guys are in this room. We see you in this kind of, like, lavish, oaken, book-filled, statue-filled chambers of this lord of this the last major city. On the edge of the land. And what is it that, how do you guys know one another though? Because you're here in this room first before the Lord arrives.
Austin, I have four bonds, but there's only three other characters.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean I repeat? Could I pick the same person? I'm like, how does it work?
I would just do one bond per PC rather than have
the fourth one.
And then just leave the fourth one blank, and maybe we'll fill it in later.
Okay.
Oh, so our bonds are described in our character books?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Let me see that real quick.
All right, so I'm just going to say Roscoe has my back when things go wrong. Greta Grimhammer knows incriminating details about me. And Jeff and I have a con running.
Okay. Cool. So one thing about bonds, I forgot to bring this up. One thing about bonds is that you, whenever you're helping somebody out, if you have a bond with them, you roll plus one to help them. But you, if at any point you feel you fulfilled that bond at the end of that game session, you erase it and you get an experience point. And I'm going to push you guys to kind of fulfill that. And what fulfilling a bond means is it's just no longer relevant, or it as a story element has played itself out.
Okay.
So, and again, we're only going to have really these two, three games to do this. So I'd push you guys to go for it.
All right. I'll go next. Dirk is keeping an important secret from me. Jeff will play an important role in the events to come. I have foreseen it. And Greta is woefully misinformed about the world. I will teach them all that I can.
All right, Jeff or Greta, tell us about your connections to these other people.
I could go. This makes the most sense that Dirk has insulted my deity, and I do not trust them since I have incriminating evidence against him. Maybe Jeff the fighter is a good and faithful person, and I trust them implicitly. And the wizard Roscoe seems to be in constant danger, and I will keep them safe.
Okay, cool. So
who's the wizard? It's
Carl is the wizard. Roscoe.
Roscoe. Okay. Yeah. Dirk is a rogue, right?
Mm-hmm. You got it.
Okay. Cool. Figured it out. Hacked it. Cool. All right. So these are interesting. Okay. So I'm running a con with Dirk. I'm going to say that. Okay. Greta owes me their life, whether they admit it or not. I've sworn to protect Dirk, and then I've got two left, and there's only one other person.
Right. Just pick one for the other remaining PC.
Okay, good. Roscoe Tinkle Chimes is soft, but I will make them hard like me.
Nice. The old Tinkle Chime. Okay, cool. Yeah. All right. So we see you guys in this and I imagine it's almost like a study or an office in like a really fancy like mansion. And you hear like these great doors opening, and you're like, the Lord is coming into the room. So can you guys give me a couple adjectives to describe the Lord?
Oh, his name is Duke of Steel.
Okay. So one of your adjectives is his name. It's Duke of Steel?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So he could be described as the Duke of Steel. How else might one describe him?
I'm setting up a whole mythology here, guys. Now we know that there are other dukes named after different metals, obviously.
Oh, I thought another one would be like Duke of Take. Duke of Receive. Duke of Procure. Okay. So what's another adjective, though, that would describe him?
Steely.
Steely? What do we think here?
Let's go with battle scarred.
Battle scarred. Okay, and one more that's like a personality kind of thing.
Lovely.
Lovely. Okay.
Yeah, I was thinking maybe he's real old too.
Very old.
I love how he said nothing about his personality.
Mm-hmm. So he's the Duke of Steel. He's battle scarred. He's very old. Perhaps he was lovely long ago, but now he's steely. Okay, cool. So these two huge doors open into the chambers, and there are guards on either side that are opening the doors, and in comes the Lord himself, the Duke of Steel. And he's an older man in his... How old are we talking here?
He's in his late 60s, so
he's in his late 60s, so he's not, like, enfeebledly old. Mm-hmm. But he comes in, and he... Even though he's well past the age where he should be wearing... where he would be, like, directly involved in a fight, he's almost ceremonially wearing armor. And he comes and he has like his helmet under one of his arms, and you could tell that it's like, it's the armor itself is kind of pristine and is for show, but he looks like somebody who's been through a lot. Maybe he's got like a lot of scars all over his face. Maybe he's missing a hand. And he comes in, he kind of looks the four of you over. He especially the fighter, his eyes kind of like linger on the fighter for a little while, and he nods his head, and he looks over at Roscoe, and he kind of like cocks an eyebrow, and then plops his helm down on like a big desk, and he says,
"All right, I'm glad to see the four of you here."
How's that coming through? Can you guys hear that?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So, are you all done with your merrymaking?
Oh, yes. Yes, sir. At your service, sir.
And he says, the land. Ooh, I got to ask, is this Duke the one who did the thing that Jeff described or that Alex described?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
No, he's not so lovely, is he?
No, he's not so lovely at all. And he'll say,
you've had your fill of wine. You've each had yourselves a good lay out there.
Those of us that are left, and my scowl deepens.
I'll say, all right, well, that's good. I'll be blunt and I'll be to the point. I called the four of you here because there's still one more thing to be done before this war is truly over. That great lizard was defeated out there while those roundies were marching on the wrong place. It's hurting my voice. And he goes, their army was crushed, but enough of them got away where we had to, where we couldn't quite catch them. Now those men out there, they fought long and they fought hard and they deserve a celebration. And this land's not going to hold together through any more war. But there's still one last group of these, the globalists left. And I need you four to go deal with them.
I'll say, but sir, I thought they were all scattered to the winds. I read the reports, and I thought it was over, right? And he like looks around the rest of the party, like to confirm that this is what he's been told.
Duke of Steel will just say like
that's what they needed. That's what these people needed. They needed this battle to be. They needed this war to be over, and the war is over. There's just one last battle to be fought before those spheroids are all done.
See, you haven't changed, Duke. Still getting others to fight your battles.
Say, well, Jeff,
what's in this for us?
And I think, and we'll address what's in it for you guys later, but I think he looks at you and he says,
well, you've always done a good job of fighting my battles, Jeff. I think you know what'll be in it for you.
And he kind of nods, and I think, like, the two of you look at each other like, maybe you're not happy about it, but you're like, fine. The two of you just go back and forth for a minute.
This is a very ritualized ceremony in our culture. Yeah. Like interrupting it would be like a great faux pas.
Yeah. Also, you notice the two of them have gotten real close to either side of the desk and are just pressed against it. Anyway, but he'll, the Duke of Steel.
My mouth is tickling under his nose.
Okay. You're extremely close to one another.
Yeah.
Your breath smells great.
Right. And he'll say on the other side of the, he'll say on the other side of the, on the other side of the dark forest, on the very edge of the world, because we all know the world is flat.
Nod vigorously.
If anything, that's what we've learned. On the very edge of the earth itself, on the other side of the dark forest, there's a fortress. Long ago, that fortress was held by an exiled king who planned to live there for the rest of eternity. It's said that no army can take that fortress without losing enough blood to flood the rest of their land. He goes, I can't put those soldiers through any more fighting. I can't put the land through any more fighting. The war is over. But I need four, let's call you contractors, to go in there and solve this problem a different way.
So, well, first of all, what's the name of this fortress that he tells you?
Galagorn.
Galagorn? Any other ideas? I just want to hear some ideas. I don't think Galagorn is bad.
Bramblethorn Fortress.
Bramblethorn Fortress?
Chartreuse.
And?
A Crimson Redoubt.
The Crimson Redoubt?
Stormhold.
Stormhold?
The Pentagon.
The Pentagon.
The round sphere?
I kind of like the round sphere, just from what we've done before with it. The round keep. Okay. Okay. I like round sphere.
All right.
He's like, the great round sphere is the name of the fortress. Named after the mythic hermit king, round sphere.
No relation to any theories, scientific or otherwise.
Yeah, it wasn't connected to anything else. It's just a coincidence. So, and he picks up a book. He picks up a file that's on his desk that says things that are not coincidences and throws it into the fire.
Can I try to sleight of hand what was in there before it goes in the fire?
Absolutely. In fact, you don't even have to roll for that because my next question is directly related to this. So I'll say either you saw it before he threw it into the fire or you just already knew this. What treasure is rumored to be in that fortress, which has always tempted you?
Cup of eternal life?
The cup of eternal life.
The cup never dies.
Yeah, the cup will live forever. I like that one. Okay. And finally, for our cleric, for Gritta, where is this? You have also heard of the round sphere before. Aside from its natural defenses, which are like incredible, why has no siege of that fortress throughout all of history ever succeeded? Like in all of the great tales and stories, no siege ever succeeded, not only because of its natural defenses, but also because...
No, they can roll it away. It's making
they can just roll it away.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's just in an utterly useless place that is just totally irrelevant to any sort of like control of the land in general.
Okay. Yeah. So I think that is the case, actually, what Alex just said. It is like off incredibly far. Like you guys, the city that you are in is the last city on like the edge of this land, like on the edge of the country, essentially. There's additional like lands that belong to the country. And it, I think, is like the only country. But like past the dark forest, there are things that are out there that are literally on the edge of the world, at like the very edge of the earth. And the round sphere is one of those. All right. So I think the Duke of Steel looks the four of you over again and says, like, so you'll do it, huh? Then you better leave tonight. So, all right.
What other things weren't coincidences?
We'll come back to some of that stuff later.
Okay.
Though there's a bunch of other things that instead of them being coincidences, they're just the replacement lyrics to that Alanis Morissette song, if all the stuff was actually examples of irony. So, but yeah, we'll come back to some of that stuff later. So, cool. All right, we kind of come back to Gritta's face as she has noticed these ogres. Gritta is the one who sees these ogres, and these ogres kind of have an ambush that they're waiting. You're pretty positive for you guys, but you have the jump on them.
And what's the situation? Are we like walking or were we sleeping or what was going on?
So I think you guys were just continuing to travel along. And yeah, like this has been an incredibly lengthy journey as you guys have been going through this forest. And like I said, it's taken a really long time, I think in large part because you've gotten lost and kind of gone in circles through this like fog covered, almost pitch black forest that even in like the middle of the day, you think it's still just incredibly dark. And so it's been really difficult to get around. And yeah, now that there seem to be these huge 12-something-foot tall ogres attempting to lay in wait to waylay you guys.
Yeah, so I think Gritta's going to maybe just grab Jeff by the arm, I guess. And
go for it.
No, just to get his attention, and then she's going to point at these ogres with her hammer. And then maybe if I just assume Roscoe's just wandering, just continuing walking, and she's going to put her hand up and just stop, like on his chest, just to stop him
Shut up.
All right. So you point these guys out to everybody?
Mm-hmm. And yeah, to Jeff, it's pretty just like, all right, let's take them out. The two of us versus the two of them. It should be easy.
I'll take the one on the left.
Roscoe's like, are you mad? Their grip strength is off the charts. I mean, they'd crush your head like a spoiled cantaloupe.
My head's as strong as a rock.
All right.
Oh, yeah, Grit is going to say, oh, well, battle's not interesting if you can't get squashed like a cantaloupe. Let's go.
Yeah. I like to backstab one on.
All right. So, okay. Well, here's my thing. Is Gritta gonna like kind of charge into the fray? Was that the game plan, or at least her game plan?
Yeah.
Okay. So I think we could maybe have we can possibly have Dirk sneaking up, but at the moment I think Gritta is just running headlong towards these ogres, right?
Oh boy.
Cool.
Yeah, I think so.
All right. Okay. Is Gritta bellowing anything, or just like? Just straight up, just running to attack.
Oh, actually, I guess. All right. So, looking at my spells, actually, I think Grita's main plan is to. She's maybe before battle, she has this like big battle axe thing. Mm-hmm. She goes like one knee and puts it in the ground, and then she's doing a prayer over this to sanctify it with a holy spell.
Okay. So, is it a hammer or is it an axe?
Oh, it's a big hammer. Did I say axe?
It's okay. Okay, so you got this big hammer and you're trying to sanctify your hammer?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, go for it. So is that a spell you have to roll, or does it automatically happen?
No, it's a spell.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So when I cast a spell, I choose a thing to happen. Because I rolled an 8. Oh, yeah, this makes sense. This is kind of where you're going to anyway. So one option is I draw unwelcome attention or put myself in a spot. Mm-hmm. And James will tell you how.
And this is just the rote cleric spell Sanctify?
Nope, this is the first level spell Magic Weapon.
Ah, never mind. It is. Okay, sorry. Okay, so what is your choice of magical whoopsie that's going to happen?
You draw unwelcome attention or put yourself in a spot.
Okay. Ooh. All right. Well, that one's easy. I think, of course, as a war priestess, the sanctifying blessing, this magical weapon, is no quiet deed at all. And what does Gritta have to scream out unto the war god?
I think it's just something like, oh, blood for my father, blood for Ragnar.
All right, and you hear like, yeah, as you scream out, blood for my father, blood for Ragnar. Okay.
Maybe she started to do it. She started to whisper it, but then she got too into it, so then she just starts screaming and thrashing her head.
Yeah, metal music starts playing.
Yeah, and
we all start playing ear guitar.
Maybe the hammer is like glowing to a certain degree. It makes a big scene. And as you do this, there's still, again, one of the ogres is looking kind of behind a tree, like hiding a little bit behind a tree, but you guys can see him. The other one is waiting nearby and hears this and turns and is like, "All right, what's that over there? Oh, it's a little, it's a tiny person who's screaming into an hammer." And the other ogre turns and says, "What? I thought they were coming this way. Is there?" And, hell, Gritta, they've turned your way, and I think what happens is, like, the one says, "Well, don't just stay there, come on and get him with me," and it starts, like, lopingly, like, moving towards you quickly, and pretty soon it's massive arms and this huge telephone-esque telephone pole, not telephone, just holding a telephone. This calls for you. Are you home? But yeah, so he's got like this huge club that's like nearly the size of a telephone pole. And it's like this creature is barreling towards you with the intent to bash you good.
Oh, I'm just going to swing my hammer right at it. Can you hear me now?
Nice. Okay. Yeah. Does anybody need to take a break?
Carl just froze.
Oh. Okay.
He's just standing very still. I've seen him do this before. It's very unnerving.
Yeah. I've encountered situations where he was buffering.
Oh, that was good stuff. Join us in 2 weeks for another episode of Dungeon World After the Last Battle. Dungeon World After the Last Battle is a product of This American Dice. Our cast includes Lee as Dirk Savage, David as Gritta Grimhammer, Alex as Jeff, Carl as Roscoe Tinklechimes, and Austin as your Game Master. The music for these episodes is by Austin and Alex. No, not the same one who played Jeff. Dungeon World, of course, is a game by Sage LaTorre and Adam Coble, if I'm saying that correctly. Please join us next time on This American Dice. Hey, everybody. If you could please rate, review, and subscribe to our show on your favorite podcatcher, it would really help This American Dice. And for every 5-star review we receive, we'll read it on air. Join us next week for another episode. This American Dice.